It doesn't matter if you love him or capital H-I-M. Just put your paws up, cause you were born this way, baby.
Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to Twin Cities Pride Amplified on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm your host, Andy Otto, and executive director of Twin Cities Pride. I want to welcome you to the show. Our goal is always to keep you in the know by hitting important topics, upcoming events, and let you know how you can get involved. But of course, we cannot get started without saying good afternoon to my assistant in, like, everything, Rena.
Hello, Andy. Good afternoon. And good afternoon to all of our listeners out there. I know Andy and I are super excited to be in the studio today, taking just a little bit of a break and visiting with all of you. Things are kind of full steam ahead right now at the
what
Pride
do you mean,
office.
The giant metal structure we currently have in our quote-unquote conference room?
Is that what you're talking about? Experimenting with different archways and entrances, how to get into the festival, and where else should we put them together than inside our office?
Hey, at least we have tall ceilings. Yeah. We're good.
Exactly.
Yes. Registration is still open for booth space. We are running tight on that. So if you want to get in, make sure you do that. Parade lineup, the parade closed the application process. So that's getting worked on. Mm-hmm. We do have the entertainment application up. So if you're interested in performing at Pride Festival, make sure you head over to our website at tcpride.org and get your application in because I know they start lining those stages up. Gosh, I feel like it's like the first week in June. They have to be done with our schedules. So
yeah, it's, and you know, that's perfect because speaking of entertainment, we are in for such a treat here today on Twin Cities Pride Amplified. We are joined in studio today by legendary local icon, none other than Julie Daffid. Julie has been a trailblazer for both the drag and trans community here in the Twin Cities area. And we are so honored and excited to have Julie with us here today.
Good afternoon, Julie.
Well, good afternoon to both of you.
Oh, Julie, I'm so glad you're on here.
Yes.
So glad. So let's give our listeners just a little bit of background about who you are. I mean, I know there's a lot of us that know you and know your history, but to those that maybe don't know, what would you tell them about yourself?
I'm old.
You're not old. You're perfect.
Yes.
I'm a good person to talk to about history. You know, history of Pride, history of the parade. Yeah. It's important, I think, for history to be carried on, mostly because I'm the age that I am, I don't remember so many things like dates and times and how long was I doing this. And you don't realize when you're in the midst of your life that someday those little details are going to become important to our history and how we grew and evolved as a as a Pride Festival, Pride Parade. And 'cause I've been active right from the get-go.
You have. You were one of the first people to ever attend Minnesota's first Pride Festival, were you not?
Yeah, stumbled right into it.
Stumbled right into it. the whole 50 people that started.
Yes. Well, you know, it was 1970, mm-hmm. and I was 18 years old, and the only place for GLBTQ people at the time, before there were all those letters.
Other letters, yep.
I don't even think gay existed yet, but was a place on Hennepin Avenue above the Orpheum Theater. It was just called The Club.
Oh.
And it was, you had to be 18, but it was a place where 18-year-olds could go. And there was also a place established through the University of Minnesota, I guess, but it was called Gay House. And that was another place for young people to meet. but that was kind of it. And so that's how I found out there was going to be a protest march.
Yeah, back when it was not a parade, it was a protest and a march down.
Very much so.
Yeah, march down. Yeah. It was Nicollet, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Nicollet Avenue?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, much different.
For a second, because it moved a couple of times.
Right. In the city of Minneapolis, construction even back then.
Well, you know, the safer routes.
Sure. And that's, you know. To my understanding, there were some people that stayed down in Loring Park in case those folks that marched got arrested. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you one of those people that got arrested?
I believe they had. Wasn't there a fundraiser for bail?
Probably. Oh, how times have changed. Yes. How times have changed in the history of that. But you have done some absolutely incredible things. You know, you were a pioneer when nobody wanted to see our existence. And so there's just so much to learn from you. And I think, you know, we've talked many, many times. And one of the things I always remember you saying is even now you'll stand on a hill at Pride and just look over the crowd and how different it was.
Yeah, I do it every year. You know, I like to pick a spot just to be by myself and to gaze over the masses of people, and real good for bolstering my pride, actually.
But how is that? I mean, to really think back over your life and think about, you know, when our community was afraid of getting arrested to now.
Well, I was just going to say that. Yeah. It's sort of like that. You couldn't get masses of people like that together if it were as frightening as it was then.
Oh, was, yeah. I mean,
it was scary. I remember the first march that I participated in. It was about meeting new people. I wasn't even sure what we were protesting, except for the cheers, you know, the equal rights now, you know.
Yeah.
But occasionally during the march, I would become like overwhelmed,
yeah,
and kind of, oh, too many people watching. I was afraid, you know, because you didn't know whether or not somebody from the sidewalk was going to cause a problem. So I'd get freaked out and I'd leave the protest and I'd run to the sidewalk where it was safe and pretend I was an observer. And then when I felt comfortable again, then I'd go back.
Then you'd go back out. Had you started to transition at that point?
Yeah, I had.
So that's a whole other level.
What I was wearing.
What were you wearing?
Oh, I was adorable.
Well, you still are.
As you can well imagine.
Yes.
Well, I was wearing a pair of course, cut off jean shorts, but the main event was the brown suede. I had a brown suede vest fringed all the way down to the knees, and just above my brown suede fringed moccasin boots and a matching brown suede headband that went around my head. Oh. And my hair was cut in sort of a shag. Yeah, it was a shag. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a pixie Judy Dench kind of style, but a little longer and the back and the sides.
I'm going to need to find a picture of that. Do you have a picture of that?
I don't.
Oh, I'm going to find one. I'm sure it went to the Trotter collection.
Maybe you can.
I'm going to hunt it down now.
I do have a picture of me holding a protest sign in San Francisco, because I moved to San Francisco in 1976 and participated in the parade there, which was a lot easier to do because there was an awful lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. That was San Francisco versus little Minnesota at that point was, mm-hmm. was quite a difference.
Boy, was it ever.
Right. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to hear more, but we're going to take a really quick break. But stay tuned, because as we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with Julie and her incredible life. You are listening to Twin Cities Pride Amplified on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
I wrap my fear around me like a blanket. I sail my ship of safety till I sank it. I'm crawling on your shores.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Twin Cities Pride Amplified on AM 950. I'm your co-host, Rena Heisel, as always, here with Andy Otto, Executive Director of Twin Cities Pride. We are joined today by none other than Julie Daffid, who has been a trailblazer for the LGBTQ community here in the Twin Cities pretty much all of her life.
Yeah. Julie, you are such a wealth of knowledge. I know you say you're old, but you're not. So, but I think there's so much to be learned from your stories, you know, trying to navigate life in the 50s, 60s, 70s when you were in your youth, really, and kind of going through this transition, figuring out who you were as a person. And I mean, I cannot even imagine from that standpoint to now where we're a trans refuge state. Like, when you heard that, what was your thoughts?
When I heard what?
That we were a trans refuge state. Now.
Oh. Well, I just remember that because of the University of Minnesota initially got involved in gender dysphoria, as they called it. So trans people from all over the country sort of flocked to Minnesota in the early 70s. Is that what you're referring to?
They did. So talk about that for a second. How was it going through the University of Minnesota, transitioning at that time? What was your experience like?
I did not have a very good experience.
I can imagine.
there was Sharon Soderfield, who was great. She was a wonderful connection. Dr. Markland, who was basically the plastic surgeon, that was sort of in charge of any kind of reassignment surgery, which is a very modern term. Actually, they're calling it something else altogether now, aren't they?
I have no idea.
Back it then, we were sex so changes.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much what we were called.
Yep. But what made your experience so rough?
Well, Dr. Markland was a weenie. Oh. I did not like him at all. Well, he was very misogynist, and he had some very specific straight old man ideas about what womanhood should look like.
Oh, yeah. I suppose.
He was quite adamant about it, you know. He's one of the reasons that I left Minnesota.
Really?
I listened to him. Duh. He said the first thing that you need to do after you've had your surgery, the bottom surgery primarily, we're talking about here, it's very important that you leave town. You break all ties with old friends, and you tell no one that you're trans.
Wow.
The term didn't actually exist back then.
Right.
Really. Trans was sort of a medical term, and it wasn't something that was bantered about to label a group of people.
Right.
And, well, there weren't many of us.
Right.
Right.
I mean, there just weren't.
Yeah.
And that's when you went to California?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. And talk about bad advice.
That was really bad advice. Oh, here, let's take you away from your support system.
Right.
You know,
right. And I
where you know no one. you know, and you have no friends you can rely on, no support system whatsoever. No, it's really not a good idea.
Well, and that's something that I think is so hard to even imagine as we think about today, how connected people are and how trying to find your community today, we've got the internet, we've got so many more support groups, we've got things out there. And but for you in the day, I mean, you were really a pioneer in this area. I mean, exploring this kind of care and then taking this kind of advice.
Well, and it, you know, it took a certain amount of guts
to
go through this process, primarily because the public really didn't know anything about trans. And so the, and we had no civil rights at all. I mean, none. And we were open season for haters. So it was very important that you be totally unreadable, you know. It was a safety thing.
It's so crazy. And because of people like you, Julie, someone like me has a much easier time. And so to that I say thank you, because without what you did and persevering and pushing forward, it wouldn't be what it is today. So I, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for that. And it allowed us to have a different path in life and probably saved a whole lot of lives by pushing forward. Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Always.
You're making me misty.
Aw. So, okay, let's go to something fun. So,
all right.
Some people notice down Hennepin Avenue, we have banners up on the street pole lights.
Oh, yeah.
So, there's a story behind that, Julie. So,
they've been up
for a while. How did that come about? Like, you know, banners on Hennepin Avenue.
Well, it was 1994, I'm pretty sure. I was the reigning empress of the Imperial Court of Minnesota.
Which still exists. Yep.
And I had friends on the Pride Committee. And I just, it got in my head one day. I was just sort of walking down Hennepin Avenue. And there were all these signs, banners up that lined the streets for different things, for sporting events or whatever. And I was like, well, this is the parade route, you know.
Yeah.
It would make such a difference to have banners. And, you know, it's not like we don't have the proper paperwork. This isn't a protest march anymore. It's a celebration.
Yeah.
It's how it's evolved.
Yep.
And so make it look celebratory. That would give, it would show city support, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did some research and made some phone calls. And I think at the time the city council was afraid to say no.
I think they currently are as well.
I have a tendency to intimidate people. I don't mean to. But anyway,
hey.
I just thought it was really important. But I, you know, I felt like I had to get city approval before I even went to the Pride Committee with it, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go there and go, well, this is my idea. And then, well, can we do that?
I don't know.
So I wanted to make sure things were sort of in place. And the only stipulation that anyone had is that we had to use their banner company, which is fine.
Yeah.
I don't care. And we had to pay for it. And those banners weren't cheap. And so I took it upon myself and as many people as I could recruit. Jeff Crump was incredible. He was my best friend to this day.
Aww.
And I couldn't have done it without him. And I couldn't have done it without Dan Dempsey either, actually. because he was on the committee. And we had to knock on a lot of doors, make a lot of phone calls. Of course, you know, bars were really interested in jumping on board. And so
I'm sure
Michael Bloom from the 90s bought, I think, 4 banners to be in front of his bar, and the brass rail did, and the saloon did. But there were many more banners that we had to sell. And so I just opened it up to the public. And I was like, okay, if this is going to work, we need people to do banners. I don't know. Buy a banner. Come out to your mother. Buy a banner. Declare your love. You know, right? I don't care.
But you got them up.
Huh?
You got the banners up.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
sure did. It was tight. It was like just under the wire of getting all the banners sold.
Well, the news of it is.
And, you know, every year I check on Hennepin to see if they're there. and there they are.
I promise you they'll be there. I will tell you they are still expensive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
So, Julie, you have worn many hats with Pride, though, over the years. And you were entertainment director for some time. Is that correct?
Yes, I was.
So, as entertainment director, I imagine that you have came across some interesting personalities across your time. a little birdie told me that you had a funny story regarding maybe a certain celebrity's daughter, Carol Burnett's daughter.
Oh. Oh, dear. Here I am telling tales. Oh, my God. Lawsuit.
We're not that big of a show yet.
No.
So you're all
right. No. And you worked with Sandra Bernhardt. Like, you've worked with a lot of big personalities as entertainment director.
When I first started out, it wasn't so bad. It was mostly like local talent. Mm-hmm. It was still kind of, it was still hard, really hard work though, because I had to book 3 stages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And so I spent a lot of time during the festival on one of those little golf carts, going from stage to stage to stage to make sure that people were on time and people had shown up. And
oh, yeah. We still see those golf carts zipping around the festival grounds trying to make sure people are where they're supposed to be and on time and have the things. So as entertainment director, did you ever get any, like, crazy demands from any performers or, like, they wanted to have this kind of bottled water or?
Well, I think you're referring to.
I'm not saying any names.
I talked to Bubba about it. Well, it was. I distinctly remember Aaron Hamilton, sort of a one-hit wonder lady.
Yeah.
And that's Carol Burnett's daughter.
That's all.
And she was so demanding. I mean, right off the bat, she was like, well, I'm going to need a scripto to sign albums with. At the time, I had no idea what a scripto was. I was like, what's a scripto? No, it's a Sharpie. What did I say? Scripto. See, I still don't know. Yeah, it's this thing.
The Sharpie. The Sharpie. That's amazing.
And I still didn't know what it was. And I was like, what's a Sharpie? And I was like, well, God, you've got your manager here. What's he doing? You know,
right?
He has better access to Walgreens than I do.
Right.
And then she was like, "Well, I am going to need." She drank Cape Cods, so she wanted vodka and cranberry juice. And I was like, "We're in a park. I can't be feeding you booze." It's like, have your manager do that for you. Get some minion out there to take care of that for you. Just don't tell me about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then, you know, especially like you have a manager, you have staff, like these are volunteers. at the festival, which I think sometimes maybe the entertainers don't realize.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Still to this day.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also
and
had
I do
some...
remember I was dressed really cute, but it had rained that morning, like a lot. And I was wearing these lavender shorts and a pair of lavender flower flip-flops. And I was running all over that park. And you know how flip-flops, if you go through the mud with flip-flops, they will actually flip-flop mud up your backside. I had these wonderful little stripes of mud that went all the way up my leg.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing.
That's hilarious.
The glamour of working festival on a rainy day.
Yes. I'm happy to hear that some things have not changed over the years, because I still think when it rains, most of us are covered in mud and soaking wet, and artists still have some demands. I won't mention any names, Kelly Rowland.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a fun one.
You can almost like tell ahead of time, can't you?
You can. No. You really can. You're like, oh, this one's gonna be fun. Mm-hmm. But it was in 1976 that the rainbow flag came to be a thing.
Yeah, I was in San Francisco. That was my first participation in San Francisco. And it was really cool. I remember being quite impressed with it.
Was that the Baker flag?
Hmm?
Was that the Baker flag?
Yeah.
We have a piece of it at the office, the Pride office.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, no, I remember, well, it's about time we had a national flag.
Right, right. And
I'm not sure I would have chosen rainbow particularly.
Oh, that's funny.
Why didn't we just have a flag that had Emerald City on it? Or
there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Little Judy Garland.
It was all about the Wizard of Oz. So
Judy Garland. Mm-hmm. Gotta love it. Mm-hmm. Oh. So it was also in the 90s where, and this is a sensitive topic to some, but where police had to become involved in the Pride because it was getting so big.
Well, yeah. And the politics had started to change a bit. There was more support. That always helps. Mm-hmm. You know, that helps the police come on board.
Yeah.
And when was it then they came on board? It was kind of late. It was like the late 1990s, like mm-hmm. 98, 99, when they actually came on board.
Out of protection? Or was it just because your crowd was getting too big?
Well, protection, yeah, I guess. Since it was sort of by this time it was a city event. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, sponsored by the park board. So I think that's why they had to have police there. It was more of a park board issue, I think.
It still is a park board issue. We'll just lay that out. Yeah. But I will say, the park board, they're great. They don't sponsor us, but they work with us, the folks over at the park board. But yes,
you sponsor them.
We do sponsor them. We are happy to give back to the park system. Mm-hmm. If they would just redo the pass, that would be even better. But yeah, it's, you know, Julie, what would you say to the youth right now that are growing up in times, things have kind of changed. They're, you know, there's more of a target now on trans youth. What would you say to them as you've lived kind of through all of that?
Well, the times are making me a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't the same country that I knew and loved, unfortunately. It's like freaking me out.
You and me both.
It's scary. Mm-hmm. It's scary once again. And it's like, oh, come on. I'm too old to protest. I have a walker, for God's sake. I can't run.
We will bail you out, Julie. We'll bail you out. God.
But I think people need to be prepared for maybe having to turn this from a parade to a march again.
Yep. Yep.
You know, it may be time for that to exist once more, because people forget. And when people forget, it repeats itself.
100%.
You know, that's why history is so important. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's really important for young people to observe life around you and remember it. Yeah. I didn't do that. I'm relying on my memory now, which isn't always very easy to do. You know,
right.
You lose track of details. Like, I couldn't tell you how many years I was the entertainment director. I think it was 6. You know, I was glad to be done with it.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's a lot.
Well, it was just as the festival itself grew, the entertainment responsibilities grew, mm-hmm. and it became a job that was no one person could handle it. You know, I was like, I can't do this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have 5 now that handle the entertainment and the stages. Yeah, it's a lot.
No, I was glad to be done with that. And I went immediately into being in charge of merchandise.
And you still have helped out in the past few years in merchandise. Don't let anybody, you know.
Well, the last couple of years, I've been wristbanding people for the beer garden.
But
as I get older, my responsibilities are shrinking.
But I love that. Like, I love the fact that you are still, you know, we make a joke that once you're sucked into Pride, you can't ever get out. And you're living proof of that, that we still have you sucked in.
It's true.
And we're not going to let
you
go.
It's like, if I'm not involved in Pride, well, then what? You know, that's part of my being having something to be really proud of. I like being part of the committee, and that's why I encourage people. You know, it's like, you really want to feel Pride during Pride, mm-hmm. be a volunteer.
Yeah.
Yes, we are always looking for volunteers.
Bolsters your pride, like, instantly. Then you too can stand on a hill and look at the crowd and mm-hmm. be proud of what's being done.
Well, and it's you see, as you volunteer, you see a completely different view mm-hmm. of the festival. And the sheer, I think as you're walking around as an attendee, you know, you're focused on your experience, but when you're a volunteer and you're on the other side, you get to watch all these faces of joy and laughter and fun and people being able to be themselves.
Yes, and you're contributing to their having a wonderful time.
Exactly. Exactly. And at the end of the day, I always say Sunday at, 8 o'clock is the best moment, because you can sit back and say, we did it. Like,
And the next day is a little melancholy.
Yeah.
Come down.
As you see it all coming down, mm-hmm. we build a village in a week exactly. and it comes down in 3 days. Yeah. It's,
as you may or may not know, I'm an actress, and I sort of, when a show folds, you know, when the run of a play is,
what have you been in?
Is over. I always go through a little depression, because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, well, now what? It's like, then you have to wait for the next gig to happen. And I feel the same way about when Pride is over. I go, oh.
Which is one of the really great things about having Andy come on as executive director is, you know, because so many people feel that way, is this push for year-round programming and trying to incorporate, like, the fall music festival and just having these other things. I mean, even the Pride nights at, like, the Wild Games and the sporting mm-hmm. events, just, like, creating more spaces and more opportunities for community to come together and just
be
social.
Well, I gave you a great little lead-in, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah, you did.
You did. It's like, you've done this before. We appreciate you.
All right, Julie, real quick, what was your most favorite show you were in?
Oh, Actually, it was a one-woman show. I think I loved it so much because it was so incredibly difficult. Well, a one-person show is always spooky. But it was a show called I'll Eat You Last.
Oh!
By John Logan. It was about super agent Sue Mengers in the 70s and all the Hollywood stars that she was an agent for. Oh. So it's real dishy. Yeah.
I guess. And you were the perfect person to play it then.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was the first person to play it after Bette Midler did it on Broadway.
Hey, that's that's something to be proud of.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, as always, time goes super quick in this studio. We have to take another break, but when we get back, we'll talk more with Julie about just everything.
Yeah.
You're listening to Twin Cities Pride Amplified on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
In a deadly silhouette, she loves the cocaine, but cocaine don't love her back. When she's upset, she talks to me.
We are back, and you're listening to Twin Cities Pride Amplified on AM 950. I am your co-host, Rena Heisel, along with Andy Otto, Executive Director of Twin Cities Pride, and we've been having an incredible conversation with Julie Daffitt. Thank you for joining us.
Julie, you're amazing. You know, we've kind of talked about a lot of different changes that you've seen in Pride, and you brought up something about this isn't the world or the country that you knew, and that, you know, if it continues to go, unfortunately, the way that it seems to be trending, the parade is going to turn back into a march. And I think that that's an important piece because we, as Pride organizers, and you know this, sometimes we have to shift on a dime depending on what's going on around the world. Yeah. And I know that you have, in your history, you've seen some pretty cool political figures like Mr. Harvey Milk.
Especially when I was living, in California, I worked for the Advocate magazine.
Oh.
And which was a nice little gig, I have to say. Because I got to meet all kinds of very interesting people, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
I used to be a part of, in sort of a part of, and then I got to pay, listen to lots of pros and con arguing back and forth in the Advocate offices with David Goodstein and Rob Eichberg and Harvey Milk and various other politicos about whether even to include B&T in the LGBT. There was quite a, it was a heated room talking about that one. Cause there were a lot of lesbian and gay men that didn't think that B and T should be allowed until they got their rights. And then we could be included.
So one of our last shows, we talked about how, unfortunately right now, there is a trend going around that is called LGB without the T and Q, because now they're trying to knock us off again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
of course.
Yeah. Crazy how
they're afraid of losing their funding.
Yeah. So how, I mean, you've lived these years and you've seen elections happen. How important is it to vote?
Well, it's vital. It's and as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to be a member of this community, you have a responsibility not only to vote but to be involved.
Yeah, you can't just sit back.
Things are going to get worse. They're going to get scarier.
Mm-hmm.
You think it's fearful now? Woo!
Yeah.
Well, and we had mentioned specifically earlier, you know, the reason we tell these stories and the importance of history is if you don't learn your history, you're doomed to repeat it, correct? And now we're right back in that battle of LGB minus the TQ. It's like this was supposedly settled.
Yeah.
And well, here we are.
I just, I remember having a conversation, actually, with Harvey Milk. I was right on the steps of City Hall when he was assassinated.
Oh.
It's that bizarre. But anyway, I was on my way to work. That was an interesting and scary time also. It was very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a true a legend in his time. Yeah.
Yeah, one of my best friends. Here I am jumping topics here.
No, that's okay.
That's all right.
I remember my one of my dearest friends lived on the 17th floor of Fox Plaza, which is just across the street from City Hall. And so it was from his balcony that I watched the whole Dan White riots happen and all the police cars turned upside down and fire.
Wow.
You've seen a lot in your time, my friend. You've seen a lot. Yeah. And just like that, we are out of time.
I think this sounds like we
I know.
Yeah, I think we need to have a whole other episode with Julie.
We do need to have a whole. There's so much we could talk to Julie about.
Yes.
But Julie, seriously, you are a true legend in our community. You have done so much for our community. Thank you so much for not only doing that, but being a friend to Twin Cities Pride and continuing to show up every year in support of our community. So thank you for that. It's truly appreciated.
Of course. I wouldn't have had it any other way.
Yes. Thank you so much for
the
being on.
The meaning of life is to contribute.
That's right.
Absolutely. And this new radio program podcast of ours, Amplified, thank you so much for being on here and getting your stories out. And I just want to remind our listeners, if there's a person or an event or any topic that you would like to see covered on Twin Cities Pride Amplified, you can shoot us an email at amplified@tcpride.org.
Yes. And I also want to shout out a special thank you to one of our sponsors, Boston Scientific, who does an incredible job supporting our mission at Twin Cities Pride and supporting their employees and their ERGs and making sure that they make a difference in the world. And so thank you for always believing in us and our work and helping create time and places like this to help educate others in the history and the culture of the LGBTQ community here in the Twin Cities. We cannot do it without our sponsors. We can't do it without folks like you, Julie, who continue to bring our story and place. If you are at the festival, make sure you go into the History Pavilion, which is the building on the outer skirts of the park, where you can go in and see so much history and so much artifacts and things like that around. We pull in the Treader collection, which is amazing to find. And I know, Julie, you are a volunteer
Bubba,
who handles
Bubba
that.
And I will be there.
Yes. See, and so if you want to go out, talk to Julie. Talk to Bubba. Bubba is one of our volunteers who runs the History Pavilion and is a wealth of knowledge. How he does it, I'm not sure. How they do it, I'm not sure. But yes, so just like that, we will be back next week when we continue to dive into important topics here on our community. Thank you for being with us today. We hope that you'll join us next Saturday at 3 p.m. right here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Please, 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 let's take care of each other all year long.
Just put your paws up, because you were born.